everybody. Welcome to Indie Corner Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I'm here with the awesome James Cullen Bressett. How you doing, James?
Hey, how are you? Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. I've had you on, I guess, Independent Corner like a few times before when it was on Blog Talk. I know I had you on Frights of the Round Table with Zach when you guys talked about that, your stuff with just your movie stuff together. I guess this is a solo show, so this will be fun. To begin with, how did you get into filmmaking?
I've been around movies like my whole life. My dad was a writer, and so I grew up around people working inside of entertainment, and so I always wanted to make movies. I just loved them, and when my dad got really sick when I was younger, it was kind of something that we were able to share together. So I just was really able to connect to film. It was like an escape and being transported to a different world where all of your worries and everything kind of just faded away and you were able to just focus on this story. So I just fell in love with it. So in school, I'd get a book report and I would make a short film about why I didn't feel like doing the book report. Because I was convinced I didn't have to do any of this stuff. I was going to make movies. And so at 18 years old, directly out of high school, I wrote my first script and was like, Robert Rodriguez only needed $7,000 for his first movie. That's all I need for my first movie is $7,000. And so I went around trying to find $7,000, was able to find it, and made the movie. And it was terrible. It was my movie, My Pure Joy. I'm not a big fan of it, but some people like it.
right.
And then, it was definitely my film school. I learned a lot from it. And from there, I've just, continued moving forward and trying to build up.
That's the funniest thing that you said, Robert Rodriguez needed $7,000 to do El Mariachi. However, today, technically, $7,000 gets you a lot, in the micro budget world.
Look at my movie to Jennifer. It was made on an iPhone for $500.
wasn't it one of the first movies shot on an iPhone?
It was. Though it didn't quite get fully the credit for it. Like the underground scene knows that it was that, but for some reason, a different movie got the credit for that, which came out years later.
You're talking about that movie. Wasn't there a movie that, what's a big time director? No. Okay. I know what you're talking about. There was a movie shot. It was like a horror film, right? Or something shot on a,
Yeah.
And then later, Steve, the director of, there's just
Steve Soderbergh.
Yes. He directed one that was all shot.
Yeah. He did Unsane. That never claimed to be the first one.
Right. But there was a trend a little bit. And I think that's amazing that people are able to, because I have an iPhone. I actually just shoot a lot of my YouTube videos with my iPhone, but I could technically make a whole freaking movie off of it if I wanted to.
Shit, I got an anamorphic lens attachment and a gimbal for my iPhone. That's awesome and crazy in the same sense. I could do Steadicam shots with my iPhone on an anamorphic lens. Being locked in your house like we are right now, I'm not sure where you are, but here in Los Angeles, California, we're on stay at home. I haven't been able to leave my house for 36 days. It makes me go wow, I wish I had actors or something living in my house so I could just be making movies with my iPhone. I'd make 10 horror movies right now from home. I'd be fucking, am I allowed to curse? Sorry, I didn't.
Yeah, you can. Actually, I'm in Van Nuys, so.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, man. So yeah. You know how it is. You'd be going ham with that.
Yeah, no, and that's the beauty is right now I'm alone. My roommate is staying with her boyfriend because of the stay at home, thing. So I'm all alone. But technically, I could even make a whole movie by myself.
I've toyed with the idea of doing that just making one by myself starring me. But I'm like, do I trust myself that much as an actor?
Well, you have acted before in a bunch of different stuff. And, you know, like, I feel like you enjoy doing it. So I wouldn't be surprised
I for sure enjoy acting. But, you know, I know what my limitations are as an actor. You know, I'm not going to lie. I'd need somebody who has, like, some serious range to be able to interest people as just one person for the entire movie. And obviously that is not my talent base as an actor.
Well, you at least you know. Some people don't, you know, some people don't know. But, you know, I've known you for a while, James. I've been watching your stuff, and especially I think To Jennifer was probably one of the first things I discovered. Because it was such a fun movie. And I'm sure a fun movie to make, you know.
In 2 years, that movie's going to be 10 years old.
Wow.
How crazy is that to think about?
So 2012?
Yeah, like right now, My Pure Joy came out 10 years ago. Jeez.
Well, that's great, you know, like, because you were young, you were ready, you know, you made your first film at the age of 18, you know, that's pretty remarkable. I mean, it took me years before I got a finished movie. It took me 2 years to finish Scary Story Slumber Party, which is like an anthology, you know, like you'd think that would be easier to get done, but it wasn't.
You know? Yeah, well, making a movie, that's why I have a lot of respect for fellow filmmakers. I mean, making a movie is just not easy. I mean, there's so many roadblocks you're gonna hit every step of the way before you even get it made. And then once you're making it, the amount of roadblocks, you're like, wait, so there's not that triumphant moment where you're like going through the stages of like going to get it made, and then you finally you're gonna get it made, and then suddenly it gets easy. It gets harder.
Right.
You know, you learn to deal with it. And obviously, like, you know, I enjoy the pressure. Like, I love it. It's one of my favorite things to do. I mean, like, making movies is when I feel the most myself and the most alive. But, I mean, ultimately, you know, anybody who would want to get into making film because they think it would be, like, an easy, chill job, believe me, it's not. And you don't know how often you're going to have to deal with both politics as well as just staying up at night obsessing about some shot that you wish you had gotten the night before.
Exactly. Because it's who said it, like that films are never finished, they're just released or something, you know, or
films are never finished, they're abandoned. That was Martin Scorsese who said that. And then Ron Howard said that every movie you make will find its own way to break your heart.
So it's so true. It's like, you know, I've done more shorts than I've done a feature, because I've only done one feature. But, you know, even getting a short finished these days can sometimes just be a problem, you know, or whatever. So I definitely always love when people are able to go get a feature film done, you know.
Oh, for sure. And I'm not trying to discourage anybody from doing it. I'm just like, on the contrary, I'm actually trying to encourage people to go out there and make movies. I just want them to be prepared for, like, it's not going to be easy, you know. And yeah, you got to find, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And to be a filmmaker, you have to literally be, I guess, insane, because you have to keep doing the same thing over and over again, believing that it's going to be different this time, that breakout film. You have to believe that every time you're making a movie, it's going to be the one that you know, hits on a level of success.
That is a great quote, by the way. that you basically have to be insane, you know, because you're doing it every, yeah, no, that's exactly true. That is, like, I mean, it's absolutely true. You have to do it. You have to think, like, it's going to be different this time, you know, because if you go in the mindset that, oh, this stuff's not going to happen because it didn't happen the last time. You're never going to get anything done.
Exactly. So, like, I mean, that's the thing, is you have to go against, like, all the instincts that you were originally taught, like, you know, oh, this is, you know, if something's not working, you know, you got to try something else. You have to be committed, you know, because here's the thing. It's very strange, but, like, you know, when I was working in film, and I was very young at the time, you know, I had met Wes Craven. I was on his pilot of a TV show that ended up not going because Wes got sick, but it was called Fright Masters. And it was like, you know, Project Greenlight, but for horror. And
oh, wow.
Wes Craven was the judge. And so, like, you know, we were put into teams and we would have to make, you know, a film, and then they would, like, vote somebody off the show. And, like, you know, I ended up actually, like, helping our team to succeed, and we won the episode. And like, I had, like, a whole triumphant moment on the episode that nobody's ever going to see. But I ended up having a lot of conversations with Wes because of it. And one of the pieces of advice that Wes Craven gave me that I actually talked about on the show that I thought was the single best thing I've heard is the people that make it in film, it has nothing to do with talent. The people that make it are the ones that didn't give up.
It's true.
And I agree with Wes in that sense, because if you're around, you know, you will get your shot. If you keep doing it and you stay at it, the doors will open, because you'll be involved for so long, you'll have done it for so long. And it's just about patience. I mean, you know, Wes talked about how with him, he was, you know, delivering pizzas and stuff and couldn't find any work after doing Last House on the Left. And you know, he was teaching English and delivering pizzas and all this crap. And it wasn't until he had the idea for, I think it was the Hills Have Eyes, you know, that things started to take off again a little bit. I mean, and then obviously, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
But I agree. Like, you have to stay at it.
Well, that's true, because look at what happened in, you know, later on in his career. I mean, he did some amazing things, but he also ended up doing, like, Vampire in Brooklyn. And that, I think that, like, scared him off from wanting to do horror again, until eventually he finally agreed to do Scream, which he was even adamant about not doing that for a while, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, you just got to keep doing it. And the other thing, I think, like, I agree with you, because I believe, like, if I'm correct, and I don't know, like, you know, whatever, like, I know a lot about Kevin Williamson because I've studied a bunch of the stuff about him, but from what I've understood, he wasn't, like, he had written Scream, and but originally his first screenplay was not Scream, it was Teaching Mrs. Tingle, which I think at the time was called Killing Mrs. Tingle. And that didn't do very well. Like, nobody wanted it. And then he made Scream, and he started shopping around, and then everybody wanted that eventually, you know. But it took him a while. He kept pushing it, and he kept pushing, and he never gave up. And that is, you know, so that's exactly right. You have to not give up in this industry. If you're going to, things are going to happen, they'll happen, you know.
And you got to deal with a lot of rejection for mm-hmm. For every, you know, 1,000 no's, there's one yes.
Exactly. And I think that's another thing, is, like, some people can't take rejection. If you can't take rejection, this is the wrong industry for you.
For sure.
But it's, you know, a lot of people are very insecure, especially actors are very insecure. That's why they do acting, because it makes them feel less, you know, it makes them feel more secure about, because they're somebody else, they're not themselves. However, because of that, you know, you're getting, you know, casting directors and everybody telling you, you know, you're not gonna, you don't fit this role, you know, and you have to just take it as like, that's just, that's not personal, you know, it's business.
And, yep. And we heard already today, I told myself I didn't fit the role for my movie I was exactly. not going to make.
I'm not casting myself in that role.
No, see, I wouldn't, producer, director me wouldn't cast actor me. Actor me wants the role.
Right, right, right. So the director, you would just be like, nah, I don't think so. We need to pass. Pass on myself. No, that's the thing, and I agree. So I totally love that. You've done so many movies. We were talking about it in the email that we were discussing, you know, everything. And I just want to know, like, out of all the films that you've done so far, like, what are your top three sort of go-to films you tell people to check out?
I mean, I ask them what kind of movies do they like, you know what I mean? But the general three that I would recommend to anybody who hasn't seen my movies is, I would say, there's about four or five that I would say, like, are the ones you would want to start off with. So Beyond the Law, which I just did, starring Steven Seagal and DMX, I directed that. That's for your people that don't really like horror movies. It's an action movie, like an action thriller, mm-hmm. revenge thriller, kind of like, you know, The Punisher or Death Wish. I think people will enjoy that. I mean, it's a fun one.
I actually own it and love it. I got the Blu-ray of it.
Thank you, man.
I did a review of it on the Indie Film Cafe. I think Quick Review Thursday thing that we did. And Blu-ray Hunter that I did it for. And I just enjoyed that. Like, I enjoyed it because it was just, you know, it was just fun. Like, I love Steven Seagal in it. I was kind of disappointed that he wasn't running around more. I don't know if that was...
Yeah, no, I dig that. I mean, I was trying to give Steven like a Don Corleone type character because, you know, right. Obviously he's not, you know, super, super young anymore. But, and he can still move. I mean, you saw in the fight in the movie, like yep. he's still able to move and stuff. But, I mean, I just wanted to focus on his acting, which I didn't think anybody in recent movies had done.
No.
And I mean, I thought his performance was great. It was subtle and right there. And I liked his dynamic with Zach. And I think Zach Ward was really terrifying in it. The first scenes when you're introduced to him, he's pretty great.
Yeah, I actually just interviewed him a few days ago and forgot to ask him about that because we had mentioned it before talking, you know, about stuff. But I really did enjoy it because I didn't recognize him, you know.
Yeah, his hair black and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely not his trademark look. But yeah, no, I mean, I think personally, like, I tried to do something that was like a 90s throwback action movie. And I feel like it felt like that. You know, I feel like that was definitely accomplished. And you know, it feels like Death Wish. You know, it feels like it's a fun movie. So for people that don't like horror, I think it's a very accessible movie of mine. Another movie for people who don't like horror is, I would say, If Looks Could Kill, which was my Lifetime movie, but it's like, it kind of plays like a neo-noir thriller, which is a lot of fun. So I would say those two are for the non-horror people. And then if you're into horror, which I'm assuming a good amount of this audience would be,
right.
I would tell them to check out probably Bethany and Pernicious and Bloodcraft. But I would say Bethany or Pernicious is where you want to start.
Okay. I love that a lot of your films are on like Tubi or Amazon, so they're just easy to access. You know, compared.
Yeah, I work really hard to try and make all of them accessible and readily available for everyone anywhere. You know, I mean, here's the thing is, like, after the initial release, you know, I'd rather they're just up on, like, something like an Amazon Prime or Tubi or somewhere where, like, people don't really have to pay, but they get to watch it. Because after the initial release, like, I just want the exposure. I want people to see the movies, you know? And so, I mean, I'm always happy to have those there. And I'm working on getting some of my older titles, like Hate Crime and My Pure Joy, up on those actually right now.
Yeah, I've been wanting to see Hate Crime, and for some reason, I just haven't gotten a chance to. I don't know. I think it's on DVD on Amazon, right? If I'm correct.
Yeah, I mean, I'll send you an online screener of any of my movies. I have all of them. I could send you an online screener of anything you want. Just shoot me an email of what you want, and I could send you like a whole bunch of them if you'd like.
Okay, that'd be awesome. I'd love to review them for the show. So. That's the one thing I love about this industry, is because there's so much passion and there's so much love in the, like, indie horror industry, you know, that, like, these films are labors of love for everybody. They're blood, sweat, and tears. They're not, I had a billion dollars to make a movie, and you know what I mean? But even
wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. Well, even with that, you know, there's still problems that pop up. You know, there's still scheduling issues. There's still, weather. There's still whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you can't predict everything that's going to go right, even if you have a huge Hollywood budget, you know?
The other thing is, like, the bigger the budget, you know, the bigger the problems. Because, like, on your small movie, I'll tell you right now, like, the bigger the budgets I started to work with, the more you deal with a larger problem, because the smaller the movie, everybody knows there's no money to deal with the problem, so half the time they never even get to you with the problem. But the bigger the movie, when there is money, problems somehow come to you way more often, because they're like, oh, well, you could just throw money at this problem.
Exactly. You know, like, I always laugh at that. Like, I watched it drives me crazy to watch stuff like Project Greenlight, which I think you'd kind of mentioned sort of before with the Fright Masters. But Project Greenlight, you know, they have like $1 million movie. And then the first season, Pete Jones realized that $1 million wasn't enough to make this movie. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, see, if you gave that script to somebody in the low budget indie world, they could make that work, no problem.
Oh yeah, easily. I mean, that's why it's funny. I've seen people talk about on like, you know, just alone, you know, reading these things that come out talking about like, oh, this low budget movie just got into Sundance, you know, like it was made blood, sweat, and tears for the low budget of, you know, $6 million. And I'm like, dude, if that's super low budget, like, give me $6 million.
Right.
I'll tell you right now, I didn't have $6 million for any of my movies.
Right. And, you know, having known, like, you can make a movie without, like, this huge crew, right? Like,
well, I think we're going to have to until this quarantine thing is, you know, like, until there's a vaccine and everybody's, like, you know, good, like, I think for the next year, even if they raise the restrictions, you're going to have to make the movies if you're going to, with a very limited crew of, like, I would say, you know, 10 people.
Right. Because, yeah, the less people, the less chance for, you know, the virus to spread and everything. So, yeah, I agree. And I think, yeah, but that's the problem is, like, you know, you look at something like Project Greenlight on HBO and you see how many people are on the set, how many people aren't probably even doing anything on that set, you know? I shot a promo for a project I was doing, and we had a $10,000, it was for a promo, and we had $10,000, you know? And I was like, and so it was like the most I've ever had for, I think, still to this day, you know, that I've worked with. And there was a lot of people that were just sitting around, you know? And I was like getting frustrated. I'm like, what are they paying these people for? You know, like, they're not, you know, like, we don't need this many people to do it, you know, to do this movie, you know?
I mean, inherently going back to those roots of smaller movies might be fun, you know, doing stuff with just limited people and just talent and resources is fun.
Exactly. What's the smallest crew that you've ever worked with?
Me?
Yeah.
No, that was the answer. Me.
Oh. Like, I thought you were asking me, you know? But no, you're saying me, you.
So I'm the smallest crew that I've ever worked with.
Was that for Jennifer?
Yeah.
That's crazy, though. But to think, like, that's true. What did you do for sound on that movie?
Hid iPhones.
Was there, like, is there, like, a was it just coming from the iPhone, or was there
No, I hid iPhones. I hid iPhones.
So you hid iPhones?
Yeah, so, like, you know, like, on the table, there would be an iPhone. Oh. Like, stuff like that. So they're recording sound from different points.
Oh, wow. So then you just mixed them in together?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an interesting way to do it.
Yeah, so you sync them up, and then, you know, you go with whatever sounds the best.
That's really cool. But you didn't have any sort of microphones that, you know, you used or anything?
The only equipment used on that entire movie was an iPhone.
That's awesome.
So anytime there was other, like, stuff recording, it was an iPhone.
I feel like Richard Linklater is going to make a sequel to It's Impossible to Plow. You ever seen that movie?
No. Like
Impossible to Learn How to Plow by Reading Books. It's literally an actual feature-length film that he did in, I don't know if it was in film school or after film school in Austin, but he had done this, basically this movie where it was just him, right? So it was him doing dishes. It was him going, you know, whatever, going places on a train, you know. It was just him being, you know, whatever, right? And he even shoots somebody randomly, but you don't see who he shoots or anything. There's like no plot to the movie whatsoever. It was just some big experimental film that he did. And he put it on the Slacker DVD or, you know, I think Criterion Slacker. It's actually really interesting. I like the commentary more because it's like interesting to hear what it went through to make that, you know. Just, this is kind of a boring movie, you know, but people are able to do that, if people are able to make a whole movie with just themselves, it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of that. Like, there's going to be, you know, it's more creativity. I mean, I've been writing a comic book.
Oh, so is it a horror comic or just a regular comic?
It's a horror comic with all the horror movie ideas that everybody said were too ridiculous for me to actually make into a movie.
That's actually a smart idea, because comics, you can kind of go anywhere.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I have all the most ridiculous ideas of mine are going to be in this comic book series called Lucid Nightmares. I'm going to be self-publishing these while this is all going on for fun.
And that's such a great thing, because we do live in the age right now, this digital age, where we can just publish books, comic books, movies, whatever, ourselves, you know, which I think probably annoys Hollywood or other publishers or whatever, you know, because now, like, anyone can do it, you know.
I mean, it's not... You know, you get the larger exposure and the larger audience from, like, a bigger distributor. But for right now, I'm just going to self-publish them for fun. And, you know, if it grows a following, I'll go with a larger distributor. But for right now, I mean, it's just I'm writing these because I'm here at home and you know, I want to be creative and do stuff. And I think it's just, you know, going to be fun. I think people are really going to like it. The first one's really weird and really creepy. And I think it's a really great way to start the series. And the second one is going to be unbelievably bonkers. So I think people are really going to like this. I mean, you know, it's called Lucid Nightmares. And so every issue is a new horror story. And it's, you know, they're 20 pages each.
I love it. That's awesome. Like, congratulations on that, like, getting that going, period.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, you know, I I think it's cool. And who knows, you know, maybe I'll turn them into movies one day because people say they're not too ridiculous when they see them. But for now, it's the stuff, you know, and I made Hate Crime, which was banned in the UK. And these are the ideas that I had that people said were too ridiculous.
Right. Well, was there a particular reason why Hate Crime was banned in the US? Or not the US, UK?
So they say that Hate Crime was banned. They said it was unfit for general population to see. And, you know, any... Sorry, am I still there? Did I cut out? Somebody called me, so it
no, you're still here.
So they said it was unfit for anyone of any age to see. And it's, you know, it basically, it's neo-Nazis are breaking into a Jewish family's home. It's a home invasion movie, and it's all made to look like one continuous shot. So part of cutting it would be having to break the one continuous shot style of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But two, I mean, it's very, very violent. There's like, you know, a whole bunch of crazy stuff in the movie. Just, you got to see it. But, you know, I'm Jewish. And so it was like, you know, what I found scary. And, you know, back when I made this in 2012, the whole thing was about like, you know, there's a rise of anti, you know, the message why we did it. And the message that is at the end of the movie is that there's a rise in anti-Semitism and hate crimes in the United States. And they have been growing every, you know, single year for the past 10 years. And that was back in 2012. That was before we saw people walking, you know, holding tiki torches, you know, yelling, the Jews will not replace us. I mean, so like the one thing that, you know, you have to look at is, I mean, you know, it was pointing out the rise in anti-Semitism and hate crimes in the world. And I mean, you know, we're now close to 10 years later and it's way worse.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's, but see, yeah, this would be the appropriate time right now for like a re-release of it or something, you know?
It is being re-released right now.
Awesome.
It is. Nice. Yes. It's going to come out again. On VOD and then likely like a Blu-ray back when stuff is able to be bought and sold to stores.
Well, that's interesting that you say that because like Walmart's not shut down. So distributors are able to still put movies into Walmart, you know, which is
no, for sure. I just don't see Walmart taking a movie that was banned in the UK.
That's true, man. They're very quote unquote family friendly and stuff. And, which drives me crazy myself because, you know, like, they are one of the biggest distributors. Like, they shouldn't be, you know, like, it shouldn't be like that, but, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I get it, though. They're corporate. But, I mean, one thing that I was going to say is, I mean, you're going to, I think, specifically be able to see this movie because I'm giving you a screener, so... You can formulate your own opinion of it.
I can't wait to see it. I really am excited because it's one of those things where, I heard of it and everything. I knew of, like, I knew that it was banned. I just didn't know why. I knew, you know, I knew a little bit more about it, but I just hadn't gotten around to buying it on DVD and everything. It's been tough, you know, like, especially being... you know, a filmmaker yourself, you need to save a lot more money on trying to just survive and try to make movies, you know what I mean? So then being a reviewer too, you know, I do go out, like I bought Beyond the Law and when I saw it at the, you know, I got really excited because it was on Blu-ray, you know?
Like, yeah,
to me, that's amazing because not many movies these days actually get a Blu-ray release.
Yeah, it's way less stuff comes out on Blu-ray nowadays. Think about half my movies are on Blu-ray.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, and so they should, I mean, I feel like every movie should be upgraded to Blu-ray, but, you know.
I think they're not fully adopting it because I don't think they look at Blu-ray as the way of the future. I think everything's eventually going to go fully digital.
Yeah, that's true. So everything's going to be like whatever K, you know, we have at, you know, later, you know what I mean? Like each time we're going to need another TV that'll be like 8K, 12K.
Yeah. I mean, I 80K. Think we're going to have like, you know, a cloud server that's going to have all of our movies that we buy on the thing, and we get to access it like it's as if it was our own personal Netflix. I think that's going to end up happening.
Well, yeah, it already does happen with Amazon, right? Like, yeah,
but I think that's going to be like the full-on future.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Well, I mean, it's good until whatever that is goes under, you know, goes under, and then you lose all of it.
Yeah, know? I mean, one thing I thought was crazy was that they were experimenting on how to watch movies faster. So they're talking about like, oh, well, you could watch it at 1.5% speed and it wouldn't affect. I was like, oh my God, if that happens, I might lose my shit.
I don't know why. Oh my God, a palm tree just started falling down a little bit, like the leaves. It's weird. But yeah, so sorry, I get ADD, so if something like, you know, you know, doing that, I'm like, what the hell is going on outside?
Windy, man.
But yeah, so I, you know, I would not want to see a movie in 1.5 speed or whatever. That would just, I mean, I want to see it in the way that it was originally intended, you know. Just I hate all these ideas that people are coming up with because they want to, you know, be the new thing of the future, you know, because it's just, some of it's just silly. But anywho, with all your stuff, so we've mentioned a lot of your films, and then you've written, you wrote like Circus Kane, and you also
me and Zach wrote Circus Kane.
Yeah, you and Zach wrote Circus Kane, which I just saw because I had Chris on the show.
Oh yeah, Chris is the one who told me to do the show. He reached out to me. Chris is great. I think he did a really good job with Circus Can. It's a lot of fun. It's a very fun movie, I think.
Yeah, and you had a little cameo in there, so that's pretty cool.
Like I said, limited acting ability.
Hey, you know what? At least you know, like I said before, you know? Like, not many people know their strengths or weaknesses, you know?
Yeah, I just want to be, like, the that way guy, like in everybody's movies where like, you know, where there's like that chase scene, right? Like right. in every action movie. And like, you know, there's like that guy just like standing at his hot dog cart, you know, he's making some hot dogs. The cop comes up. He's like, which way did he go? And like the hot dog guy like points to like the left. I mean, and then they like go running down by foot to go like after the guy. I want to be that guy. The guy at the hot dog stand. Like, I could be that guy in every movie, I think.
So if anybody's casting for a hot dog guy, there you go out there.
You know what I mean? Up. But, like, there's always that guy. And he points to the side. Like, I could be the that way guy.
Yeah, you don't even want to be the hot dog vendor. You want to be the guy that's just at the hot dog stand.
No, I want to be the vendor.
You want to be the vendor? Okay.
The vendor that... Well, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'll just be the hot dog guy.
I was thinking you're just the guy buying the hot dog and then somebody runs up.
It depends
and
which one they're asking, which way the guy went, you know?
It'd be even better if each time they give you a different, there's a different direction.
A slightly different, a slightly different iteration.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm saying like for both of you. So the hot dog vendor says this way, but you say that way and then confuses the person. They have to pick a way to go. It's each time. You know, each movie, like that would be a weird like anthology like connection right there. You know, see that's where my mind goes a lot because I do a lot of anthology stuff. You know, I'm like, how could you make that work and connect those two things into an actual story? But thank you so much, James. Like, this is awesome interview with you. Is there anything like? Is there any advice that you want to give to like young filmmakers who are trying to go out there and make it?
Go out there and make it, you know? I mean, that's the best advice I could give. Like, you know, anything I say beyond that is going to give you some reason to dissect this, to come up with a reason why you shouldn't. And if you are looking for a reason why you shouldn't, then you shouldn't. But if you want to jump into making movies and you want to be a filmmaker, you should go out there and do it. You should start right now. You should pick up your phone, shoot something in your house, just start making something, you know, because here's the thing. And I think, you know, the pandemic is kind of illuminating this a little bit, but like, you know, I told myself for years, I just needed some downtime where I could work on my scripts and work on my comic book. And if I have that downtime, like I would totally do it. And then I got this downtime right now and I did do it, you know? And so that's the thing that you have to like ask yourself, like if right now you're coming up with reasons why you shouldn't, when you're at home doing nothing, you should start doing what you want to do. That's my advice.
That's really good advice. There you go. Just do it. Just like Nike, just do it.
You know? Now's the time. Now's the time to just be a filmmaker if you want to.
I feel also that this time has been making people a little bit more lazy because they can, you know, instead of being more creative than they should.
Hey, I'm making a comic book series, so if they want to be lazy and read my comic, we'll talk about it.
That's true. Like, if they want to read your comic book while being lazy, go right, you know?
Yeah, no, but I, all jokes aside, like, I feel like, you know, this is the time, like, I've lost 18 pounds in this since I've been locked down. Like, because I was just like, you know, I've been dieting and exercising in my house. And like, you know, by exercising, like, I just have like two free weights and like, I'm doing sit-ups and like, you know, it's like $25 on Amazon, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and like, you know, jogging, it's like, you know, you can't right now, if you want to do stuff, you can do it. And, you know, I mean, I'm just the worst thing you can do is come up with an excuse and then accept your excuse, because once you give yourself a way out, you're going to choose the way out instead of the hard work. But that's what it is. Hard work and determination is going to get you where you want to go. You know, and I mean, I listen to motivational speakers a lot, and that seems to be, you know, the consistent thing. It's hard work, determination. Don't give up. I mean, I've talked about it for the majority of this podcast, but it's truly how I feel. And I think, you know, people that want to go out there and create, go out there and create, you know, but the hard work and determination is what's going to keep you there.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much. Is there any projects that you have going on right now or anything that you like to discuss that we haven't talked about yet?
Lucid Nightmares. Check out Lucid Nightmares. I'm going to be releasing this comic book pretty soon, probably like a month and a half. You're going to get issue one.
Oh, wow.
And so like we're around the corner here. And I'm going to do like a limited run of like, I think like 300 copies. That's it for the first issue. So I'm
so gonna going digital on it. Like a digital.
I'm going to number them and sign them and that's it.
Cool.
And then maybe I'll do another run, but if I do, it'll have a different cover.
Awesome. Like a variant.
Yeah, I'm doing it for collectors, man.
That's really cool. I like that.
So, I mean, here's the thing. You know, and I've enjoyed coming on here. Hopefully I'm not, you know, rambling too much, but I'm just trying to, you know, tell people the motivation and really, you know, get out there and do it.
Yeah. No, we need to hear that because, you know, there are some people that they're just so, I guess, jaded by this industry that they can't give that kind of motivational, you know, thing. And then there's the people who, like you, who just love it, you know, so much that no matter what, they'll tell people, like, you might have hardships, you know, or whatever, but you're still doing it.
Anybody who tells you it's going to be sunshine and rainbows is lying. You know, there are definitely hardships, and you know, a lot of people, you know, ask me, you know, I personally don't feel like I got paid to direct a movie. I don't get paid to produce a movie. I get paid to deal with all of the bullshit that I have to deal with in order to be able to direct the movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the directing part, that's fun. I'm doing that because I like it. Everything leading up to it and around it and all that stuff, that's the bullshit that I get paid for. You know?
Exactly.
That's the way I rationalize it in my head. So like what you have to rationalize in your head is like, You know, you're going to have to deal with bullshit. There's a ton of it, but you just figure out how to navigate it, stay positive, and keep your mind at, like, you know, the goal.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much. How can people reach you if they'd like to contact you?
Follow me on Twitter at James Cullen B, or on Instagram. And this one's really shocking, but it's also at James Cullen B.
You know what? It's easier to do just one thing. Sometimes, yeah. I mean, I realized that was a mistake I made in the beginning of, like, having, like, my Twitter is at Jonathan Moody, but then my Facebook fan page is Jonathan A. Moody Filmmaker. And then my Instagram is like Jonathan A. Moody Film. You know what I mean? Like, everything's different. And it's kind of a pain in the ass because then I have to write them all out.
Yeah, you want that uniform.
Exactly. You want that
uniform. But hey, thank you so much for having me on. And hopefully I didn't take up too much of your time. And yeah, thank you so much, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And I look forward to that comic and seeing all your films again.
Yeah, anything you want a screener for, just let me know.
Okay, definitely. All right, have a good one, man.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye.